It is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us this morning, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning.
So
I think AM is trying to tell you something.
You can fly.
What a way to get attention.
Oh, it really
at
is.
At a radio station.
they are, let's just say, attention-seeking individuals and have been from the very moment that they arrived here, with AM absolutely jammed into a carrier because he was morbidly obese, and FM with different names. Trying to figure out how he was going to maintain his Lex Luthor program.
Now they've learned how to run the station.
They have. They're very adept. And all right. So I have a bunch of questions here, but that doesn't alter the fact that somebody stopped me and asked me a question, and I have another question. So the first question is: it's at this speaking, you know, pretty cold outside. What, and yet, do you put horses out? There are people who have their horses out.
People do put horses out. I think that they need to get out a little bit, but depending on how accustomed they are to being out with a heavy blanket on, you know, as long as they're able to move around, they probably would prefer to be out a little bit, unless it's windy. But typically, you know, they need to have shelter where they can get in away from the wind.
Sure. Okay, that's a very good, quick answer.
Very icy, though.
Right, and then that you don't want with your...
No.
You sure don't want that.
No.
All right, now speaking of very icy, this is actually a third part of a question. If, for example, you have a doubly disabled spaniel who doesn't like salt but doesn't like booties, have you come across any particularly... bootied improvement? Sorry.
No, but I haven't ever met a dog who likes booties.
Okay, because I just... I haven't either, but yet you see these adverts. These are deep fakes. Forget deep fakes in terms of intelligence or NSA. Think about these dogs that are standing there wearing booties looking happy, and so you buy the booties and the dog's like, what, are you kidding me?
Yeah, and I think some of the dogs will wear them because they know that you want them to. But they're not able to really run around and hold them on. So right. if you're going for a walk on leash, then and a short walk or a little dog that you can pick up, then it certainly is a possibility. Realistically, it's hard to keep them on if they're off leash and running around. Musher's wax, you know, can protect those pads against the salt a bit. You want to clean it off afterward because the salt can, you know, if you've got a lot of salt stuck in your musher's wax, it's eventually going to get down to the skin. Have you heard of that before?
Oh, yeah, I have it. I just, really, what we do is really rudimentary. We watch them suffer and then bring them in and, wash their feet.
Yeah, they shouldn't be out for very long.
No, they
shouldn't be
not.
Out for very long in this weather anyway.
No one wants to be out for very long anyway. But the point is, it's just like as messed up as it is, I haven't found my experience thus far is there isn't a product that really so quick.
Yeah, it's not great, and the biggest problem or one of the big problems that we have is that dogs don't want to go out, and they have to. You know, we don't want them to. Do their bathroom duties in the house, so they need to go outside. And so getting a little coat, and you can always try the booties. Take your dog outside, go out with them, which is really unpleasant.
I know, especially, hey, you're in the country. If you're in the country, theoretically, the dog should go outside, and you shouldn't have to. But
right, but that doesn't always work.
No, it doesn't. All right, and then question three. This was a listener who, this may be more complex than... you want to get into it because it was a rabies question. Mm-hmm. And the long short was that this individual was bitten by a young dog that had one rabies shot but not a booster. and was trying to find out, basically, if she was going to get rabies, and no one could answer the question. And it was more a resource. It was more a resource. Like, how do you find out? Because no one would take a position, basically.
Until the dog's been watched for 2 weeks.
And so, the dog is in quarantine.
Yeah, so you have to quarantine the dog for 2 weeks. And if the dog is still alive, then it wouldn't have had rabies and hasn't been treated. You know, it wouldn't have had rabies for two weeks ago in the saliva. So basically, if your dog is sick enough with rabies to have it, the virus being shed in the saliva, then it will be dead within a couple of days, usually, but up to 2 weeks.
So,
but you can also, you know, I would want a rabies titer run. They don't come right back. They don't come back really soon. But so if, for instance, if a dog had one rabies vaccine and it was overdue by that booster for a month, then likelihood the dog would have been well protected still against rabies. And so you run a rabies titer, and if it has a very high protective titer, then there's certainly less concern over that 2 week period. The problem is getting the titer results back. It usually takes 2 weeks to get the results back.
That was pretty much what they established. Every single action
took a while.
Yeah. And you know, in this day and age, you sort of want to know if you're going to start.
Well, if you've got a dog who's 10 and had a 1 year rabies when it was a puppy, then it's a lot more worrisome.
Yes.
So it really kind of depends on the dog, the age of the dog. You said was fairly young still.
It was fairly young, and so in my
What was their potential exposure to rabies, and was the bite out of character? You know, if you've got a dog who bites all the time, it's unlikely that they're biting you because they are rabid.
Yeah. It was one of those unfortunate sort of incidents where you ended up getting bit. My understanding is it wasn't that the dog ran up and bit the person.
Mm-hmm.
It was
somewhat provoked, but not on purpose.
Well, I think that there was some sort of incident in breaking it up or whatever. A tooth got into a not into, but the skin was broken.
Yeah. Yeah, it is scary, and you do have to go to the doctor for those things. But the amount of worry for the time that the dog is quarantined, you know, is commensurate with whether the dog acted like a rabid dog and attacked, or and how is it acting now in quarantine? If it's acting completely docile and fine, then it's certainly less worrisome.
Okay, so basically, you can. Put a little bit of that's the best intelligence. Then you can take a little bit of a
common sense and risk assessment.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I think that a lot of times they go ahead and give you the post exposure anyway.
Yeah, they didn't, and I, you know, I'm not a doctor, etc. The bite didn't. I let's just say I've seen far worse.
Mm-hmm.
But the real issue was, hey, is there anything? It seems like a massive catch 22. You know, who do you call? What do you say? Everybody says, well, you have to wait 2 weeks. Long
story. I know. Well, no one wants to take the risk that it might actually be rabies.
Well, I want to give myself points because what I said is, you know, actually, no one will want to take that risk, but the bottom line is common sense and risk assessment. So.
Right.
And I think that by now, probably the story is. Because the dog wasn't quarantined for a few days and the dog was still fine.
I see. So. Yeah. But it is, I can imagine lying there at night wondering. I actually have been there myself. Lying there in the middle of the night. What if that dog was rabid?
What if
that cat really did bite me through the skin?
Do I have cat scratch fever? Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Right. All right. And now, after the, thank you very much for the, shall we say, off-the-cuff hijacking. Let's go to Richard from Hudson with his 2-year-old male Great Dane having just been diagnosed with Addison's disease. The vet is giving me the option of prednisone in addition to routine injections of DOCP, but I'm not really clear on whether it's good to go with prednisone. I usually think of prednisone as something to avoid, at least when it comes to my own health. What is your opinion?
So Addison's disease is a lack or decrease of production of the glucocorticoids from the adrenal glands. So it's an adrenal gland problem. When the adrenal gland produces too much cortisone, it's called Cushing's disease or hyperadrenocorticism. And when it's not producing enough, it's called Addison's disease or hypoadrenocorticism. So when it's a very serious disease, it can cause weakness and electrolyte imbalances, so sodium and potassium mostly, and weakness and vomiting, and profound weakness. So the DOCP injection is trying to replace some of the cortisone. So it's mineralocorticoids, the ones that are responsible for electrolyte and water balance in the body. And it usually does a great job with that. Once you get it at the right dosage, it does a great job, and electrolytes are back to normal. But some dogs do okay just on that injection. I find that many dogs also need a little bit of prednisone, which is a different kind of glucocorticoid, and just to give them to replace what's missing in their adrenal gland, to give them enough energy, enough of a boost to be more normal. And so in this case, the prednisone is really replacing what your Great Dane's adrenal gland should be producing, and will give them the benefit of having what's supposed to be naturally produced in the body. So it's usually very small amounts.
And it's not the same as, I'm just going to do human brain here, it's not the same for Richard as his own prednisone, because whatever he would be, in most cases, what he would be giving it for would be sort of on top of what his body's already.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's sort of like replacing thyroid hormone, you know.
Right.
You're going to try to, and it's just can be a little bit tricky to get it just right, but it takes a few months to regulate them. And you can, with frequent visits and lab work, you can get it just right, and it may have to be adjusted at different times. So if there's a stressful environment, your need for more cortisone is their need, and they may actually act sick because they don't have enough. They can't make more when they need it, and so you need to supply it. So that is, I think that a lot of dogs, especially a dog the size of a Dane, would probably do better clinically with a little bit of prednisone.
Okay. Justine in Park Slope. I live in Brooklyn. Recently, I was talking to a vet who lives in Vermont, explaining that my 4-year-old border collie, Maisie, regularly chows down on the mud in our local park. And when I say chowing down, I mean nothing will stop her. The vet told me that wasn't normal. I told him, show up at Prospect Park on any given morning, and you will hear at least 20 people shouting at their dogs to quit eating mud. He didn't seem to believe me. Well, the other day, someone at the park told me they think it's because of the fertilizer they put on the grass. I've never seen any, mind you, nor have I ever seen maintenance crews putting fertilizer down. Still, it made sense to me because Maisie's never interested in eating mud when we're out in the country. So my question is it bad for them? Also, if it isn't fertilizer, what else could it be? Any ideas?
So most of the dog parks, most of the parks where the dogs are running around, I don't usually see grass.
Right, exactly.
At all. But this is a problem occasionally. I've seen a couple of dogs eating mud. People come back, and every time they come in, they say, my dog's still eating mud. And we've checked for everything, every kind of deficiency, you know, often that you can imagine, and also supplemented with vitamins and minerals, and doesn't seem to make a difference. So in some dogs, I think it is behavioral. It certainly could be fertilizer because of natural fertilizers. Many fertilizers are made with are fish-based, and so sometimes they will like that fish flavor, and definitely dogs will get into organic fertilizers if you put them in the garden. They will eat them, and they're not good. It's too much nitrogen. I don't know whether it's working its way down into the mud. I do know that dogs will copy, especially a fairly dominant dog. The other dogs will go along and copy it, especially a young dog. My young dog, even at a year and a half, will copycat anything that any other dog is doing that looks like it's having fun. Or getting something that he's not getting.
Or
it doesn't matter
or
what
enraging
it is.
Or enraging its dog parent.
Yeah. So it is. It can be it very well might be a problem with behavior. If there's one place where they're eating the mud, maybe you can coordinate with people and try to cover it with, you know, my dogs were getting into something over near the compost. They were digging in the dirt there. I don't know what it was. And we covered the area with a tarp and put rocks around it, and they couldn't get to it for a couple of weeks, and then they forgot about it. So or covering that mud with something else, I don't know, but it's not a good thing for them to be chowing down on mud. So you need to either keep them on leash or somehow keep them away from that area. I agree with that. But I don't know the reason for it in this particular. 20 dogs, it seems like they're copying each other.
Yeah.
You could take the soil, though, and have it tested. And certainly when you live in the country, you can have soil tested by the local agriculture departments that help farmers. So I imagine that soil could be tested to see what's in it.
That's true, too. Wouldn't that be just, hey, call 311 and say, guys, we've got a bunch of dogs here. How do we get the soil tested?
Right. And I think that could be accomplished.
Yeah, should be. That seems totally doable. And if anyone's listening and is going to copy, do that. Ask the question that way. Not can we. How do we?
Right.
That's all right. I think we've got time for one more question. I'm being told by our producer that we do. Kate in New Preston, until last week we had two house rabbits, Vegas and Dakota. They were completely pair bonded. Since Vegas died, Dakota has been depressed. He does drink water, but he will not play with his toys and shows little interest in food or grooming. Obviously he's grieving, but how long is it okay for him to go on in this way? We are particularly concerned about him losing weight. When a bunny loses weight, it seems to happen so fast. Is there some kind of liquid supplement you can give a rabbit in their water if they are not eating solid food?
Well, my concern would be that it would be fairly normal for Vegas to eat less than usual, a little bit less than usual, and not move around as much in depression. But it wouldn't be normal if he's not eating. So something else may be going on, and especially since... I'm sorry, it would be Dakota, I think, that you said
Dakota's still alive. But he's not showing interest. Dakota is not showing interest in food or grooming, but he's drinking water.
Yeah, so that's not normal. I would say to bring him to a veterinarian who knows rabbits. Definitely would not wait more than a day of not eating with a bunny.
There's
something wrong. Yeah, so if his mate died, first of all, I guess I don't know what the mate died of, so was it... want to make sure it wasn't something that's contagious or potentially an environmental threat that would be a threat to your surviving bunny. So definitely a veterinary visit as soon as possible.
Okay.
To make sure everything's okay. That there's not a hairball or something else going on.
Right.
And lots and lots of attention, of course, helps. Holding and attention, you can help to take the burden of that loss.
All right. We've got two more minutes, so I'm going to try and jam in one more question. And that is Harper in Pittsfield. I'm a long-term house-sitting situation for a couple who has 5 cats, 3 full-grown and 2 kittens. Last month, the kittens came down with conjunctivitis, and now all the cats are infecting each other over and over again. It's making me crazy running them to the vet. How can I keep them from continually passing it to each other?
Well, if it's clearing up with medication... and then coming back, which this sort of sounds like, the way to do it is to treat every single cat at the same time for the same length of time, each with a different tube of medication, and clean the environment. So that's what would make sense to me. If it's viral, it may just pass around for a while. If the kittens have a viral conjunctivitis and have passed it to the older cats, it's somewhat unusual, but if your vet's not addressing that with you, I think that they can come up with some sort of a solution. Even if you need to separate the kittens from the other cats while you're doing this, then treating everybody simultaneously until everybody is cleared up. And if you've got if the adults are cleared up and the kittens are taking a much longer period of time, you may need to get a diagnosis. Try to get a diagnosis by a scraping of the conjunctiva, some blood testing, that type of thing. But what makes sense to me is to treat everybody simultaneously. Make sure that you are not a vector, so you have to wash your hands really well and make sure that you're a vector means some carrying disease from one patient to another. And make sure that you have a different tube that you're using of medication for each individual. Sounds like a lot of work, but it may be less than hauling them to the vet.
And I will be willing to bet just off the cuff any amount of money that's the one thing that hasn't happened here, because it's a long-term house. So it's just each one with conjunctivitis, I bet, is being taken in one after the other, and no one has said, "Woohoo, slow down, let's just do everybody at the same time." And
It seems like it at this point that would make the most sense.
That's what's, you're absolutely right. And then, you know, then failing that, you start looking for other things. And good point about making sure that you're not acting as a, love that word, vector. That's what I want to be when I grow up. I want to be a vector.
You want to be a vector. So the one more point, too. Kittens sometimes will, this conjunctivitis will flare up after they've had another booster vaccine. So you have to think, I don't know how old they are. If they're little tiny kittens, just keep them in a room by themselves. So they'll play with each other. You can go in and pet them. They'll stay out of trouble a little bit easier. And if they're little kittens like that, and then they're not going to be contagious every time they get their vaccination booster. So that's another possible plan.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cannon.
Thank you, Ms. Vector.
Yeah.
What's your new name?
I'm loving it. All right. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.